is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hey, Hoopheads, I wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hi, this is Joe's Decision from Unleashed Potential, and you're listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
Prepare like the pros with the all-new Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Fast Draw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering Hoopheads listeners 15% off Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Just use the code HHP15 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improved communication with your team. Fast Model also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its playbank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. Fast Model Sports is the best in basketball. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here with my co-host Jason Sokol. Welcome back, brother.
Oh, it's been a week and a half, Mike. We do this podcast after the finals games, and last week we were supposed to record, and somehow I contracted pink eye, Mike, and I don't know how. Still don't know how. No one else in my family, man, it miraculously got it, even though I was in a car with them. I was on vacation with them. I have no idea how I got it. I was in some terrible pain. And the first half of my vacation wasn't necessarily the funnest. But the second half was good. And, So, like I said, I have no idea how I got it, Mike. But I got it, and then I was on vacation. And, yeah, so...
Hey, well, we were rolling through game three, and then we got to game four, and we went silent, and then the Nuggets win the title, and we went silent, and we talked about it a little bit before the pod that I was going to jump on without Jason for a quick minute and just do a Han Solo podcast, and last week with camp and everything going on, just decided, let's just scrap it, and whenever Jason's back in town, we'll have this conversation and kind of wrap up the finals, and we are officially headed towards and right in the middle of the infamous silly season. So we will see.
Silly season. Wait, we're not heading towards, Mike. It's already started, right?
It's there. Well, I guess free agency is when you really think about it being super silly, but I think we're already getting silly.
Can I get a little silly first, though, before we even do that, Mike? So while I was on vacation, I came across this Twitter thread. Name NBA fact. Or respond with the NBA facts that are so weird but true. Mike, did you see this thread going on or not?
No, I did not see the thread.
These are the three that I liked. Right. And there were a lot. Okay. But these are the three that I liked. From 1994 and 1995, Cavs were the illest team of all time. Four of their five starters had the word name ill in their name. Can you name the four starters from the 94-95?
There were four. Bobby Fills.
Okay.
Gerald Wilkins.
Nope. That doesn't spell Wills.
I thought you said Ills.
I-L-L. Wilkins is not I-L-L. Ilkins.
Fills wasn't I-L-L either.
Yeah, it
was.
Is. Fills is P-H.
Fills is two L's.
I-L-L-S. Yep.
So I need I-L-L in there.
I-L-L. Yeah. Bobby Fills.
94. Bobby Fills.
Come on, Mike. Man. This is disappointing me.
94, 95. There's got to be a Williams in there.
Oh, yeah. Come on. He drives a fast car. It's a
Hot Rod. Hot Rod was a starter in 94, 95.
Yeah.
Let's see.
Man, he's a bald
really
guy.
A Hot Rod.
Bald guy.
Bald guy.
Bald guy.
Okay.
Play from power forward center for the Cavs. Come on, Mike. This is my youth. You don't know this? Tyrone Hill.
Tyrone Hill. All right, there you
go. And then Chris Mills. Mills and Bobby Phils. I'm disappointed.
Mills, Phils, and Hills.
I'm so disappointed in you. I thought for sure you were good. I only liked that one because it was the Cavs 94-95 one. Okay.
I had nothing on that one. That was one of those ones where my brain went dead immediately from the beginning of the question. So,
all right,
I had nothing.
The top three players selected in the 1992 draft ended up on the same team 13 years later. Okay.
The 1992 draft.
Okay. Can you? That would have been like the year after you were done, or the year before you were done with college, right? Or a year after that,
I was done in 92, so that would have been the year.
Oh, come on.
That would have been the year I graduated.
This should be a cakewalk then. The top three picks.
The top three picks in 1992. Well, see, the problem is the guys that graduated high school my year, I think those guys all came out. I think they all came out early.
Okay, Alonzo Mourning. Alonzo Mourning is one of those three. Yes,
Shaq.
He's the second one.
Christian Leitner.
There you go. See, you just had to think for a second. I knew.
Yeah. Like, see, but here's the thing. Like, that's why. Like that question and the Cavs question. I think what happens to me, honestly, is I'll get. It's like an immediate. Oh, I know that if I just think about it versus the Cavs one. I probably could have thought about it for a while, and I'm not sure. My brain just wasn't opening that door for whatever reason.
All right, and then the last one is not a trivia question, but this is a true fact. I looked it up.
All right.
Kings have been to a conference finals more recently than the 76ers.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, that makes sense. It makes sense.
That's crazy because the Kings hadn't been in the playoffs until this year for so long. Like,
right, but you think back to – yeah, I mean, it's been a long time. Philly's been bad.
2001, right? Iverson?
Philly's been bad. Yeah, Iverson's the last one, right? And the Kings were 2002, if I'm not mistaken. So, yeah, crazy.
Yeah.
And with that, Denver wins their first title.
Yeah, so congratulations to the Denver Nuggets. I'm going to continue to – I've got that thread saved. So I'm gonna continue to look
through. All right, that's a good
one. For threads.
All right, yeah.
For ridiculous ridiculous NBA facts, and I'll share some of those with you every week. How does that sound?
Okay, that sounds good, man. Right. I like it.
Okay.
Those are good ones.
So the Nuggets win the championship, and, you know, I'm just glad that I picked the Nuggets in five, Mike, even though I know I last time we recorded 2 weeks ago, I said, oh, I think they're going to get another one. I mean, to be fair, Mike, and the games were a lot closer than we both thought they were going to be at the beginning of the series, right? Now, I'm not saying that the Heat really...
Yes and no. I mean, the reality is, though, it was a... Miami only avoided a sweep because of the fourth quarter of Game 3.
Yeah.
And other than that, you could say that Denver, whatever. I mean, Denver obviously won four games and wins 4-1, but that series without the fourth quarter of Game 3 where Miami goes crazy and scores 36 points... The series is a sweep for Denver. And, yeah, I mean, the games were close, I guess. But I don't think there was ever a moment. I still go back to the way I felt before the series, after game one, after game two, even after game three. It just felt like there was nothing that Miami could do with Jokic. There was nothing that they could scheme. There was nothing that they could put in place. There was no alternative strategy. It just felt like Denver could do what they needed to do in order to be able to beat the Miami Heat, both offensively and defensively. And I think the series kind of played out that way. And obviously, Jokic was historically great. And I would say the weird part of it is that as great as he was, he maybe wasn't as great as he could have been. I mean, I know it sounds crazy when you look at a guy who averaged, 30, 13, and 8. Something like that in the NBA finals. And there's something about Jokic's 30, 13, and 8 that just doesn't have the same feel maybe as what we think of a finals MVP putting up. But if you watch those games, he just does kind of whatever he wants to do. And he's so efficient. I think part of it is that he doesn't take as many shots because he's so efficient as guys who typically are scoring 30 points in finals games. Like, usually those guys are dominating the ball and they're taking tons of shots. And that's just not the way Jokic dominates a game. It feels like he does such a great job of getting other guys involved. And then if you need him to get a bucket, you're like, hey, man, go get us a bucket. And he can get you something. And it may not look pretty, and it may not be necessarily a play that, ooh, look at that highlight. That is completely spectacular. But it almost always goes in. And I think back to, man, we've been doing this podcast a long time. I think back to when we first started and we were doing these NBA pods. And I know there was a point where I'm like, I don't think I've ever watched Jokic play a basketball game. And he was probably in his second year by that point, third year even maybe. And now you just look at what he's
become. You
pulled
the tape, right? Have you saying that, Mike? Roll the tape? I'm just kidding.
I didn't roll the tape. I did not pull the tape. That would have been quite a research project to go back in and try to find when exactly I said that. Maybe there's better AI technology out there that could find that.
Oh, ChatGPT?
Could find it? Could that find it? I don't know. If you throw the file into one of these programs, could they go and find the things that you're trying to say? I don't know. But anyway, I know at some point that was a topic of conversation. And then we went from there into, can this guy be a guy that gets it done in the playoffs? And the weird thing is that was even a narrative going into this playoffs. And yet, if you go back and you look at his playoff history, he's been great in the playoffs every single time that he's been there. And yeah, his team, especially the last 2 years without Murray, hasn't had a tremendous amount of playoff success. But you just look at, again, the skeleton crew of guys that he was carrying before. And now you put the full complement of this Denver Nuggets team around him. And he's right there. I mean, he's got two MVPs in the regular season. He's got one finals MVP. He's got one title. He is now, based on what he's done just to this point in his career at 28 years old, he's one of the probably 20 best players in the history of the game, maybe even higher than that right now. And there's no reason to think that he's not going to continue to pile up tremendous seasons. And Denver is well positioned contractually, age wise, with the guys they have to continue to be able to be in contention. I'm not going to say that they're going to win three titles in a row or anything like that, but they're going to be in position with this particular group. When you think about the Murray, Jokic, Michael Porter Jr., Aaron Gordon, when you think about those four guys, are going to be in place for the next couple of years for sure. And it's hard to imagine that they're not going to be right there knocking on the door year in and year out. And again, that may not mean they're going to win it every year, but I would not bet against this team being in multiple NBA finals over the next 3 years. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if I'm ready to say he's one of the best 20 players in NBA history, Mike.
What do you want him to do? I mean, he's average. Career average, like I forget exactly what the number is, but he's played more than 60 playoff games. He's averaging a 27, 13, and 7, somewhere in there. Huh. He's got the seventh highest scoring average in the history of the NBA playoffs.
So telling me you couldn't name 20 players in NBA history that are better than him? You couldn't.
I don't know. I'd have to go through the list, but I'm just saying, when you watch what this guy did in this playoff run, and I know there's been the debate back and forth of, was this a good playoff run? Was it a weak playoff run? Who were the teams that they played against? But the reality was, you go back and you look, and yeah, the Lakers were a play-in team, but lots of people thought the Lakers were going to beat Denver. Lots of people thought Phoenix, who was the betting favorite in Vegas, was going to beat Denver. And other than the historic performances by Booker and Durant.
All right. I pulled up the NBA 75 list.
Okay. All right, let's do it.
Okay, here we go.
I'm ready, man. I'm ready for this. I'm ready for this exercise.
Okay, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, no.
No. Are we marking these down? You want me to mark these down?
Just put a tally mark. Just do a tally mark.
All right, give me a tally mark. Let me get a piece of paper.
Okay,
all right,
Ray Allen, I agree with you.
Okay, so we'll do, let's. Are we going through the? Are we going through this entire 75?
Okay,
list?
I'll just.
No, let's just do. Let's do it, man. Come on, just read them. Just Giannis. Read them off. Or Giannis, he's not better than Giannis.
No,
I don't know. I'm asking.
I don't think he's better. I don't think he's better than Giannis right now.
Their credentials are the same. Two regular season MVPs, one Finals MVP, one championship. I'm just asking.
I'll say that they're level.
Okay, level. So we'll say no. We'll say no. We'll
Carmelo,
say no.
He's better than.
Correct.
Nate Archibald, he's better than.
Yeah.
Paul Arizan, I can't even.
Yes.
Okay, I don't even know who that is. Charles Barkley. Okay.
Won a title. He's won two regular season MVPs. It's better than Barkley.
Better than Barkley. Okay. Rick Barry.
Debatable, but he's better than Rick Barry.
Elgin Baylor.
That's a tough one. That's a tough one.
I'm going to say Elgin Baylor is better. Just
all right.
Okay.
So
Dave,
that's two.
Dave
that's two.
Bing, I'm going to say I don't know him well enough, so I'm going to.
No. Detroit Pistons.
Larry
no.
Bird. No way.
Not at this point. No.
Kobe Bryant. No way.
No.
Wilt Chamberlain. No way.
No.
Bob Cousy.
Debatable. Obviously debatable. I mean, clearly based on era, Jokic is a better player than Bob Cousy was, but era to era, hard to say, but I would say Jokic has got to be ahead of
okay,
Bob Cousy.
Dave Collins. I don't – sure.
Better.
Billy Cunningham.
Better.
Steph Curry.
No.
No. Anthony Davis. Yes.
Yes, better.
Dave DeBusschere. How do you say his
Dave
name?
DeBusschere.
Dave DeBusschere.
Come on, Dave DeBusschere.
Okay.
Better than
okay,
Dave
so DeBusschere. That's one column.
All right, keep going, man.
I know,
well,
it's one out of four columns. How many are we at already?
Right. Six. We're at six.
Okay. Clyde Drexler. Better.
Better.
Tim Duncan. No. Get out of
no.
here.
No.
Kevin Durant. That's probably level. Level.
That's – yeah, that's I got yeah. We'll put Giannis and Durant. We'll put him level with those two guys. With,
okay,
with
Julius Irving.
So those could go either.
No, Patrick Ewing.
No, I love Doc better than Patrick Ewing.
Better Patrick Ewing. Walt Frazier.
Better than Walt Frazier.
Better than Kevin Garnett.
Better than Kevin Garnett.
Better than George Gervin.
Yes.
Better than Hal Greer.
Yes.
Better than Harden, we can agree on that one. Better than
yes, that's a
better than
for sure.
Better than Havlicek.
That's a tough one. That's a tough one. I'm gonna say Havlicek.
Okay, Elvin Hayes.
No.
Allen Iverson.
Better than Iverson.
Better than Iverson. Okay, LeBron James. No.
No.
Magic Johnson. No.
No.
Sam Jones.
Better than Sam Jones.
Michael Jordan.
No.
Jason Kidd.
Hard no.
Jason
on that
Kidd,
one.
Yes, he's better than that. Kawhi.
Jason Kidd's an interesting one. Oh, no. But I agree. Better than Jason
Kawhi.
Kidd. Better than Kawhi.
Better than Kawhi because of his health.
Yes.
Okay. Dame Lillard. Better than Dame Lillard.
Yes.
Better than Jerry Lucas.
Yes.
Better than Karl Malone.
Yes, I mean
knowing that Carmelo doesn't have a championship. If we're going to hold him to that category, then yes,
yes, okay. Yes, yes.
Moses Malone.
That's a tough one. Let's put Moses in the equal category.
Okay, Pete Maravich.
Better than Pete Maravich.
Okay. Bob McAdoo.
Better than Bob McAdoo.
Kevin McHale.
Better than McHale because McHale was never the best player on a championship team. Better than McHale.
Mikan.
I mean, I don't even know how you compare that. Better than Mikan.
Okay.
I mean,
Reggie Miller, he's better than.
Yep.
Earl Monroe, he's better than.
Yep.
Steve Nash. Steve Nash won how many MVPs?
Both two-time MVPs. Jokic has a title. Nash doesn't have one. Jokic is better.
Okay. This is a tough one, Mike, right here. Dirk.
All right. Man, I think you got to say Jokic is better. I mean, it's crazy, but I think Jokic is better than Dirk.
Dirk just did it so long.
The longevity of his career. But okay. I would take peak Jokic at this point over peak Nowitzki.
Hakeem.
No, Hakeem's better.
What?
Hakeem's better.
Okay, Shaq is better.
Shaq is better.
Robert Parrish.
Jokic.
Okay, Chris Paul. Gary Payton. Oh, no. Oh, come on. Don't get this pop-up NBA.com. Get out of here. Gary Payton.
Jokic is better.
Bob Pettit.
Jokic.
Paul Pierce. Jokic.
Yep.
Okay, Scottie Pippen.
Jokic is better.
Willis Reed.
Jokic.
Oscar Robertson.
No, Oscar's got to be ahead of him.
David Robinson.
That's an interesting one.
He's right there with Duncan, man. I mean,
let's put David Robinson in the equals category. Okay. Although, I think
it's a coin flip, probably.
Yeah, I think Jokic is better, but let's put Robinson. Okay, Robinson deserves.
Rodman, we're gonna skip. We got Bill Russell.
No.
Dolph Schayes.
No, Jokic.
Bill Sharman, Jokic.
Yep.
John Stockton.
Jokic.
Jokic. Isaiah Thomas.
That's a tough one. That's a hard one. I'd still say Jokic. Jokic is better. But, I mean, Isaiah was the best player on two Pistons championship teams. Was never a regular season MVP, though. I'd still put Jokic just slightly ahead of Isaiah. Okay,
Nate Thurman, Jokic.
Jokic.
Wes Unseld, Jokic.
Jokic.
Dwayne Wade.
That's tough. I mean, Wade, best player on the 2006 Heat championship team. Second best player on two title teams with LeBron. I think Jokic is better.
Okay.
No?
I think that's an equal.
I'll put it in equal. Okay. We'll put it in equal.
Bill Walton.
Jokic, I mean, just by the length of his career.
Jerry West.
I mean, West, the longevity of his career, I think West has got to be better.
Okay. Westbrook.
No. That's hard, no. It's a hard no.
Lenny Wilkins.
No.
Dominique Wilkins.
Jokic is better.
And James Worthy, but
Jokic is better than Worthy.
Okay, so what's the tally, Mike?
So that's the list. So we have 17 guys that we said were clearly better.
Okay. Then how many?
And then we had five toss ups. So
okay. Well, I only took you to task because Simmons said 25 on his pod with Rosillo, and you said top 20, and that's kind of
top 20. So we're right in that. We're in that range.
Mike, I was just giving you crap, man.
No, I know. But I'm just saying you're in that. That was a useful exercise from a standpoint of when you start to really think about historically what it means to be a top 20 player in the history of the league. You start realizing and looking at those names, and then you start looking at, okay, who are the guys that we felt like his career right now was even with? I mean – he's right there. I mean, he certainly could be a top 20 player. He's without question a top 25 player.
Yeah.
I mean, I think even if you put all five of the guys that we said were even with him, that puts him at what, number 24. That puts him at 24. So at worst, we have him number 24. So he's right there. Look, and he's a guy who there's no foreseeable reason why he's not going to continue to have the kind of success that he's had over the last 3 or 4 years. He's not a high usage guy. He passes the ball. People are always going to want to play with him. He doesn't rely on athleticism. I just think that he's going to continue to put up big numbers, or at least as big a numbers as he wants to put up in the regular season. And like I said earlier, I think Denver is set up really well to continue to contend for titles. Again, I'm not saying they're going to win the next four in a row or anything like that, but I think over the next 3 years, I think I'll be very surprised if they're not in multiple NBA finals over the next 3 years. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I think it's completely reasonable that they win another title, and certainly they're going to be right there, barring injury to their any of their main guys. So we'll see. Their big thing in the offseason is what happens with Bruce Brown. Can they bring back? Can they bring back Bruce Brown? Try to say that fast. Bring back Bruce Brown. Can they do that? We'll see.
Malone made a pitch in his drunken parade speech that we're going to pay that man. That's what he said. And I don't think he has much of a choice. He was also very intoxicated and had to be helped stand up straight multiple times during. Did you watch his speech?
I did not. But well, Bruce Brown. I think it was Zach Lowe today when he was talking with Bobby Marks, and they were saying that Bruce Brown, what they think that if Denver's going to re-sign him, that they'd sign a 1-1. And after that first year, then they'd have his bird rights. And so then they could kind of give him a wink, wink, hey, sign for this amount. Because I think they can pay him like 120% of, I think he made, I forget what his salary was this year. For some reason, I'm thinking it was either 3 or 6 million, but whatever. They can pay him 120% of that. And then he declines that player option, and boom, they take care of him, not this season, but the following season. At the same time, if you're Bruce Brown, man, you've never had a big payday. And I'm sure there are a lot of teams out there that would be willing to pay Bruce Brown probably more than what Denver can afford to pay him, at least for 1 year. But it'll be interesting to see how much being a part of a championship team weighs with them versus trying to get a big paycheck. Again, Bruce Brown's not a guy who's banked a ton of lucrative contracts and can afford to be like, well, I'm just going to go to the best basketball opportunity for me. He's going to be a guy who you have to believe wants to cash in at some point. So we'll see what happens with that. But that to me is the big move for Denver in the offseason, is what do they do with him? Because their big four is all under contract and are going to be back for, I think they're all under contract for multiple years, if I'm not mistaken. So we'll see what happens. But Denver's got to go into the next season as a favorite.
Yeah, and now they have some new contender, maybe, in the West, Mike?
I don't know. What do you think about this trade?
Let's do the bare bones of it, and then we'll talk about it. So the bare bones is this. Now, it's not finalized. It has not gone through because the Wizards are trying to figure out another trade partner to send CP3 somewhere else because they don't want to pay it. So the current structure is Bradley Beal's contract, and I think there was some other miscellaneous pieces here. Bradley Beal, oh, crap. There was some other random because they had to make the contracts. But the main pieces of our Bradley Beal to the Suns, and they're going to send Chris Paul, Landry Shamet, multiple second round picks and pick swaps. What I couldn't believe is there was no first round picks in this. And whatever. But regardless.
Well, the reason is because of Beal's no trade clause. So
yeah.
That there's basically no leverage on
the Phoenix's end. The best thing I saw was that CP3's clause in his contract was he gets double the pay if he gets traded. You saw that, right?
Chris Paul's yeah, contract.
He's supposed to make $15 million, or he gets
no.
What was it?
No, that's not right. No. He's guaranteed $15 million if they don't waive him. If they waive him before June 28th, he gets $15 million. If he gets traded, well, so and then there was another clause in there where once he gets traded, then he was guaranteed, and I don't know if it was written as a percentage or whatever, but I heard or read where he's now been guaranteed. As a result of him being traded, the full value of his contract was like 30. The number that if he had been waived by June 28th, he was still guaranteed 15. And now that he's been traded, no matter what happens, waived, signed, playing for the Wizards, he's guaranteed $25 million at this point. And I don't know what the inner workings of the clauses and what all that was, but that's my understanding of what would have happened and now has happened as a result of him being traded. So I don't think it was him doubling his salary. It was a clause in there that it was whatever. I don't know if that's a trade kicker or what it is. But
and then he ends up finding out on a flight to New York. He happens to be promoting a memoir that he wrote. I don't know. They asked him about it on GMA and he's like, yeah, I found out my son texted me while I was on the flight. I didn't know I didn't know anything. He's like, I had heard about Bradley Beal maybe coming to Phoenix, but he hadn't heard any other pieces. And then when he was on the flight, his son texted him saying that he was a part of the trade, the reported trade. And poor Chris Paul has been on this trying to hawk this new book, and now they're asking about his trade instead of the book. So whatever. Anyways, not that – I mean, it is what it is, but it's just interesting. And then, listen, here's the bottom line. Matishbia clearly doesn't care about going into the second apron of the luxury tax, and more power to him. But I don't see you're basically going to be left with, okay, you have the four players or three players, Beal, Booker, Durant, who none of them, by the way, have proven that they can be healthy, right? I mean,
correct, 100%.
None of them 100%. Have proved. I mean, Chris Paul has been healthier than them. Mike, if we look at the number of games played the last 2 years, Chris Paul's probably played more games in the last 2 years than all three of those players. Well, no, Booker was relatively healthy last year. So I want to say Booker probably has him beat. But Durant and Beal, Chris Paul's played more games than in the last 2 years. Guaranteed. I'm willing to say that. I feel pretty confident in that. But, like, I just don't get it. Like, there's only one ball. You're going to have those three, and then you're going to have DeAndre Ayton if he's still on the team. Is he on the team, Mike? Is he on the team?
Well, I was stunned when the trade came out that it wasn't Ayton. Like, when you sent me Chris Paul or whatever, Beal to the Suns, and we were actually driving, and I turned and I said to Meredith, I'm like, I want, and Cal, I'm like, hey, who was – so Ayton – Ayton traded to the Wizards for Beal. I wonder what else was in the trade. And that was before I obviously looked at the details. So I was stunned that Ayton wasn't in the deal, but it shows you again that Washington had little to no leverage. Now, again, is DeAndre Ayton a guy that you want to trade for and then pay $30 million for the next 4 years to? I'm not sure that that's what you want to do, but it was still stunning that he wasn't there. I think if you're Phoenix, right, like, problem is that DeAndre Ayton is a good player. Like, he does things that can help your team. You think back to that finals against Milwaukee, and he was probably their most effective defender against Giannis. Now, that doesn't say a whole lot when Giannis averaged 35 a game or whatever he did in those finals, but Ayton was a above average two-way player in that playoff run. Now, he hasn't lived up to his status as a number one pick, obviously. Luka being in that draft, that's always going to hang over his career. But clearly, I think he's a guy who, because of whatever differences he had with Monty Williams and because of whatever went on in that game 2 years ago when they lose game 7 to Dallas in the playoffs at home, and that was a whole weird situation that I don't know what Ayton got blamed for, what was going on behind the scenes, but it certainly feels like he's a guy who would be a pretty good candidate for, hey, we get this guy a change of scenery and maybe he becomes something more than what he was when he was in Phoenix. And look, I'm not around the guy watching him practice all the time. There are things that I've heard people say.
I mean, I told you on the podcast, I had inside information.
That's it. So I just, look, I don't know what kind of a dude on DeAndre Ayton is. I don't know how close he's going to ever come to fulfilling his potential, but he's a good player. I think he's not going to be on the Phoenix Suns for that very reason. And I think if you're Phoenix, what you're going to try to do is trade him for multiple players who better fit the profile of what you need around those three main guys. So you're basically looking for guys who can shoot and space the floor and guys who can defend. So you're looking for as many 3-and-D guys as you can possibly get, which the irony of, when you trade Mikal Bridges and you trade Cam Johnson to get Durant, which obviously if you don't trade those guys, you don't have Durant. So it's all speculation, but they had two of the better 3-and-D wings on the roster prior to that. So I don't think, to be honest with you, when I look at this deal, what is Bradley Beal at this point, right? Like, when was the last time you or I saw Bradley Beal play a meaningful NBA basketball game? the Celtics series in what was that, 2018, 2019 against the Isaiah Thomas Boston Celtics. Other than that,
Mike, I wouldn't be able playing. To pull that out. I'm pretty impressed.
Well, it's just there's nothing like I don't remember. You can't tell me one thing about Bradley Beal's career in the last 4 years that is relevant to any of our discussions at all that we've ever had on this podcast, because we're not talking about the Washington Wizards, who, look, they haven't been tanking, they haven't been winning. They've been right in the middle. Beal has been hurt in and out of the lineup, hasn't played.
If I told you he played 50 games this season, would you believe me?
50s were kind of right in the number I probably would have guessed if you just didn't guess, ask me straight out. Right, but there. This is my point, is that the average NBA fan, and even the two of us who are probably above average NBA fans, I don't remember a meaningful moment from Bradley Beal's career in a long, long time. And so what is this guy, where's he at in terms of maximizing his skill set? I have no idea what you're getting in trading for Bradley Beal. Are you getting the guy that averaged 30 plus a game a couple years ago on a bad team? Are you getting his 3-point percentages have fluctuated up and down? And sure, he's going to get theoretically more open shots and more catch and shoot threes when he's playing with Booker and Durant than he was trying to create everything for himself in Washington. But Phoenix lost to Denver because they're not very good defensively and they're not very deep.
Oh, what you're saying, Bradley Beal isn't going to improve their defense, Mike?
Look, is Bradley Beal, this is like any guy, right? Bradley Beal's a good athlete. Is he capable of playing functional defense, maybe in a better environment where they can win? I would have to guess yes. But is Bradley Beal a plus defender? I would say no. Is Booker a plus defender? I would say no. Durant can and has been a plus defender in his career, but sometime next season, I think he turns 35. And with the depth that this team lacks right now, barring some miracle roster construction between now and the beginning of November, Durant's going to have to play major, major minutes on this team in the regular season just to be able to get this team to a decent seed in the Western Conference. And so I think you're asking an awful lot of those three guys defensively when the rest of your roster is just going to be kind of filled out with veteran minimum dudes and guys that they can kind of pull off the scrap heap. I mean, look, if you're Phoenix, I think you saw this year that Booker and Durant by themselves, surrounded by just whatever dudes around, isn't enough. And so now you say, okay, well, maybe adding a third guy and then still having that smorgasbord of average players around them, maybe that gets us over the top. Yeah. And obviously, as you said, Ishbia doesn't care about the second apron or the tax or whatever. He's got the money to burn. He's a new owner. He wants to make a splash. He's going to do all these things. You made the trade for Durant. That's when you went all in. This is a second doubling down on going all in. Bradley Beal as your third best player, I don't think that's a terrible thing, but I don't necessarily like the fit of these three guys in terms of them complementing one another and being a two-way team. I just think that it's going to be really hard to fill out the rest of the roster and build a competent defense when these are your three best players. And I'm sorry, but Durant is on the downside of his career. I think we've seen the best of Kevin Durant, and that's not to say that he's not still going to be very, very good. But I think the last 2 years in the playoffs, you think about that Nets series against Boston last year, and then you think about this series against Denver, where it felt like, I mean, he scored like 27 a game in that series against Denver, but he did not ever look comfortable kind of taking over. I think the days of Durant just dominating games, I think that's past. And look, Booker's their best player, but I don't know. I don't think this does enough for Phoenix. And yet at the same time, I can't fault them for doing it when I'm not the one paying the bills, and Ishby obviously doesn't care about any of that. And you can add Bradley Beal for Chris Paul, who you probably didn't want on your team anymore, Shamit, and then a bunch of second-round picks. I mean, who cares? You're basically giving up next to nothing for a guy who is clearly better than anybody else you have on your roster in terms of filling those spots behind Booker and Durant. So I think it's a trade that if you're Phoenix, you have to make, but I'm not sure that it gets you to where you want to go. So,
okay. I agree. We're in agreement on that. So where does Chris Paul end up, Mike? LA? One of the two LA teams?
You would have to think that those are the two favorites, two teams that are still positioned to be able to win, which clearly I think Chris Paul at this point in his career wants to go to a place where he can win. If he has a choice, right? I mean, if he has a choice in where he goes, he would like to go somewhere where he can win. And he's been a West Coast guy. I think his family is based out in LA. So probably going to LA would make a lot of sense. I keep coming back to Milwaukee for some reason, and I don't even know the dealings that would have to go on in order to make
Milwaukee
it happen in terms of the
Milwaukee
money and contracts.
Hasn't even been in the conversation from what I read. I did a lot of reading on my 8-hour car ride today, and I haven't seen Milwaukee.
Milwaukee keeps sticking with me. Now, that's not to say it's going to happen, but I think he'd be an interesting fit with the Bucks. I think he probably ends up with the Clippers if I had to bet.
Okay. I think the banana boat's closer to coming to life than ever before.
Maybe.
Get Carmelo out of retirement.
Maybe. I'm sure he'd be willing to come back. I'm sure he'd be willing to come back and ride the banana boat up and down the Pacific.
Anyways, so I guess let's go there before we go draft. Like, there's been a lot of rumblings about the Cavs specifically and some trades for Jared Allen. And, like, I know there's all these – God, it's brutal, Mike. People talking about these trades, like these ideas, like Draymond Green for Jared Allen. That doesn't fix the problem. Shut your mouth. Would the Cavs benefit from having a veteran presence like Draymond Green on their team? Probably would benefit. But I'm not trading Jared Allen for Draymond Green. I'm not trading Jared Allen for – well, there was another ridiculous one I heard today. Oh, crap. Who was the other one? Oh, someone was talking about Jared Allen for DeAndre Ayton. I don't want to pay DeAndre Ayton. We already talked about that. Like, no. I don't know. I know you threw one out before we started recording that I hadn't heard at all. Go ahead, Mike. What was the one?
Porzingis. I like Porzingis. I mean, I think of those three guys, if I had to rank them in order of which guys I would want, I think I would probably say I would want Porzingis. Then my next choice, that's hard because I do think Draymond would be a guy that could help the Cavs, but I don't think that I'd like to add him to the Cavs as currently constructed, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
Trading Jared Allen for Draymond Green, you're giving yourself the same problem that theoretically raised its head during the playoffs, which is you have two bigs out there who can't shoot. Draymond obviously doesn't solve that problem. DeAndre Ayton doesn't really solve that problem necessarily either, although he has more of a mid-range jumper that he can make at a higher clip than what Draymond can shoot the ball. But DeAndre Ayton's a better player in a vacuum than Jared Allen. But to your point, I'm not sure I want to pay DeAndre Ayton $30 million versus paying Jared Allen $20 million. But the Porzingis side of it, I do like when you consider the fact that he's 7'3". He blocked, like, I think a shot and a half, if I'm not mistaken, this past year. And he shot close to 40% from three. And there was a big article about Porzingis. I think it was on The Ringer yesterday or the day before, just talking about how much he improved at some of the areas where in Dallas that he got criticized for. So he was like the second or third most effective scorer out of the low post. He was one of the, I think, top five players off of a drive in terms of points per possession. And so they were all things that in Dallas he struggled with. And this year with Washington, he was much, much better. Obviously, the question with Porzingis is
health.
can a guy stay healthy? When he's been healthy in his NBA career, he's been a very good player. I mean, an above average player on both ends of the floor. The question has always been, can he be healthy? And there's been times where he's been playing and hasn't been 100% healthy. And therefore, he just wasn't able to move the way
he wanted to be able to move. He played 65 games this year. That's pretty good.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, that's what I'm saying. So if you take and you say, okay, let's flip Jared Allen for Porzingis. I think Jared Allen is probably a better overall defender than Porzingis. But when you're talking about rim protection, Porzingis can still do that pretty effectively. And I think when he's healthy, I think he's a pretty good defender. I think he moves his feet pretty well for a guy his size. And look, a 7'3 dude with arms as long as his that can move, regardless of how great you are defensively, just a guy that big with that kind of size helps. And we know what Mobley is, and Mobley, if he's not already, he's one of the five best defenders in basketball, and he's going to continue to be one of the five best defenders in basketball for the next 10 years at least.
Yeah.
So if you put a guy that can shoot out there the way Porzingis can shoot it, and still maybe you're only getting 85% or 90% or 80%, 75%, whatever you want to throw on there, of Jared Allen's effectiveness on defense, the way you're upgrading on the offensive end to me would be interesting. And again, it hinges on Porzingis' health, but I would make that trade if I was the Cavs, if it was available to them. If you're Washington, I'm not sure what that really does for you.
Gets you a lottery pick. Gets you a top lottery because you're traded Bradley Beal, and now you're going to trade. I mean,
Jared Allen's not a guy that's going to – Jared Allen's not going to win you many games on a roster that is below average. He's not. He's the kind of guy that's additive.
You want to lose.
Right. But I'm saying he's additive. That's what I mean is you're saying, well, you're getting back a guy that's a good player. I see Jared Allen as being a more effective player on a good team as opposed to a guy that's going to shine on a bad team, if that makes any sense. The things that he does are additive to a good team. And maybe he's not going to win you a ton of games because you have Jared Allen on your team. He's not that kind of player. So I wouldn't mind to see that. I wouldn't mind seeing that deal. I wouldn't want to trade for Ayton. And I'm not sure I would want to trade for Draymond Green. If you could sign Draymond Green as a free agent for a relatively decent salary, which you're not going to be able to do. I mean, you're not going to be able to sign Draymond Green for $12 million a year. But if you could, and you could add Draymond Green in that circumstance, I think he'd be a guy that would be valuable for the Cavs, but I would not want to trade Jared Allen for him because you're just swapping out basically similar. You're going to have similar issues in terms of the spacing around what you already have.
Yeah. I would probably just stay with Jared Allen, to be honest with you. Like, I think we're overreacting to a bad series against the Knicks, and we have nothing better to do because we think the Browns are the second coming of Jesus Christ that this year, for whatever reason, that these people in Cleveland that were now unhappy with the Cavs, who've been consistently the Indians have been the most consistent organization in the last 10 years in Cleveland. Or Guardians now, but like Cavs now consistently been good. Now we're just going to rip apart what we've built. I just think Jared Allen's a huge piece of the culture of the Cavs and the fabric of the Cavs. And I think it would be, I don't know how good it would be for the Cavs to get rid of him for anyone, unless it's something that's really, really wowing me. And I don't even know something that would really wow me. I just worry about the culture more than the on-the-floor product because I think he's a huge piece of the culture of the Cavs and the fabric of what we are. And that's my bigger piece of it. And I understand that culture is not necessarily going to win you anything. But I just think
he's the
anchor of the culture of our team, I honestly believe. And I'm concerned that if we just give him away for nothing – now, if we get a good deal on this, then maybe I could be talked into it. I just don't know if Porzingis is enough for me.
to say, like,
yeah, I think a healthy Porzingis to me would be enough to make that deal. I would not make the deal for Draymond Green, and I would not make the deal for DeAndre Ayton if those are the three that we're speculating on at this point. I like Jared Allen as a player. The Knicks series, as we talked about, was disturbing in a lot of ways with a lot of the players that we have. And I think that because it was so shocking how poorly they played, that it sort of stunned people into thinking, well, maybe what we thought we had isn't really what we have when it comes to playoff basketball. And look, we've said it a million times, and we can maybe leave our Cavs talk here, but it all comes down to the Cavs' future, all comes down to where does Evan Mobley get in terms of reaching his ceiling as a player? Is he going to be a guy eventually who's going to be able to shoot threes? Is he going to be a guy that you can run offense through? Is he going to be a guy that's going to average 26 a game, or is he going to top out as a 18 and 10 guy who plays great defense? I mean, if he's an 18 and 10 guy who plays great defense, this team clearly is not going to have enough, no matter how good Mitchell and Garland are. Mobley has to take that next step and be the guy that you can give the ball to, that's going to be able to score, going to be able to knock down shots. And who knows? I don't know if he's going to get there or not. The tools for him to get there are there, but whether or not he gets to that level, all this other stuff is just kind of things that are going on the periphery.
Okay. All right. So the last thing we got to talk about is the draft on Thursday, really briefly. I really have zero input on the draft other than Victor Wembanyama should not step on the mound, pitcher's mound, never again after his first pitch. And he's clearly going one. Woj is reporting that the Hornets are pretty set on Brandon Miller at number two. So then it just really comes down to are the Blazers going to stand pat at three and trade for and take Scoot? Or is someone going to get traded? I don't know. But that's where I'm at for the draft. I know there's talks the Cavs might try to get back into the first round and all these other things going on. But quite frankly, I haven't paid any attention to the draft stuff because I was on vacation and I didn't do any reading on that. So,
all right. Well, the two things that I think that are draft related, obviously the big question has been, at number two, what does Charlotte do between Brandon Miller and Scoot Henderson? And if they take Brandon Miller, who theoretically I think is a better fit next to LaMelo Ball, who needs the ball in his hands, and it sounds like Scoot is that same type of player that people speculate that when he gets in the league, he's going to be a guy that is more effective on ball as opposed to off ball. So from that standpoint, Brandon Miller probably makes more sense for the Hornets, considering that LaMelo is going to probably have the ball in his hands. Brandon Miller plays off of LaMelo as a secondary ball handler, as opposed to having two primary ball handlers sharing the ball. But then that's where things get interesting, right at number three, where you have Scoot, who's a player who's 6'2". Portland has had the small backcourt for as long as Dame has been in the league, with his partnership first with CJ and then now with Anthony Simons, both undersized guards who are not known as defensive stoppers. As good as Scoot might be on both ends of the floor as a 6'1", 6'2 guard, just like we've talked about with Mitchell and Garland here in Cleveland, I just don't think those guys better be unbelievably good offensively, which we know Damian Lillard is, and we have no idea whether Scoot Henderson will be that type of player or not. But it feels like Portland, do they really want to go down that road? And if they do draft Scoot and just say, hey, that's what we're doing, is that enough for Dame to be happy and say, all right, let's run it back and see what happens? So I guess for me, the question then becomes, one of the teams that Zion Williamson has been linked to is the Trailblazers. And so you start looking at, to me,
well, I think blazing a trail, Dame, Mike.
He is. Let's leave. Yeah, we'll leave Zion's off-court activities right where they need to be. But I think Dame and Zion, to me, are the two names that when you start looking at this number three pick, if Charlotte takes Brandon Miller and you have Scoot left at number three, it becomes really interesting. And maybe something will happen before the draft. Maybe something will happen during the draft. Maybe something will happen after the draft. But it seems to me to be highly unlikely that the Blazers draft Scoot Henderson, who's, I think, clearly based on all the speculation that him and Brandon Miller, and then there's a drop-off after number three. So it seems like it would be a stretch for them to pass on Scoot Henderson and pick somebody else who might fit better positionally. So if you draft Scoot, does Damian Lillard say, okay, we're going to roll it back with Shaedon Sharpe and Anfernee Simons and Scoot Henderson and me, and that's going to make us a contender in the Western Conference, and that's going to make me happy? Or is Dame applying pressure saying, hey, you better trade that pick to try to get me some help, or you better trade me because this looks like a situation where the Trailblazers are going to be rebuilding? And then is Zion somehow a part of that maneuvering, whether that be trading him for Dame, whether that be some combination of picks, the Scoot Henderson pick, Shaedon Sharpe goes out to New Orleans. I don't know. To me, that's sort of where the intrigue of the draft lies. I mean, if I had to bet, I don't think Damian Lillard is going to be on the Trailblazers at the start of next season. Zion, man, I don't know. I mean, here's the question. I mean, I know the answer. I know your answer to the question. Would you trade for Zion if you were a team?
He's not playing 250 games in his career, Mike. So no, I wouldn't.
So no, you wouldn't trade for him. I guess it would depend on what you're being asked to give up, but man, to get a guy with that level of
so on the ability, Cavs, Mike, if the Cavs were given the opportunity to trade Zion,
what do I have to give up?
My question is, what are you willing to give up? What players on the Cavs are you not willing to trade in for Zion?
I would not trade Mobley for him. Man. I would easily trade Jaren Allen for him.
That's not an option, Mike.
I would probably trade one of the two guards for him. Either or.
Why would you do Chetty like that?
Chetty could be some trade filler.
Raul Neto?
I'd throw Chetty in. I could throw some Ricky Lamar Rubio? Stevens at New Orleans if they wanted.
Listen, I'm not giving up Darius Garland, Donovan Mitchell, or Evan Mobley. Anyone else is on the table. I'm not willing to give any of those three up.
All right, well, you're not getting Zion without putting one of those guys in the deal.
He's not going to elevate the team if we trade one of those other guys if he can't even be on the floor.
He
might have a lot of baby announcements he has to do. Like Can you quote
let's see how well you know our podcast. Can you quote my statement about Zion Williamson? When Zion Williamson
is healthy, he's one of the best players in the NBA. Yeah. Sure.
He's been historically great.
Yeah, so he's been historically on the floor, great.
He's been historically great.
Mike.
I'm just saying, if you could get Zion Williamson.
When I was on the NBA floor, I was historically great.
You were. You were a great fan that one time when you were in the high five tunnel. I saw you. I saw your work. I would have a hard time not doing it. If New Orleans came to me and said, we will trade you Zion Williamson. And again, we're all speculating because the money – well, probably the money actually would match up with either one of those guys. But if you just traded Zion Williamson for Donovan Mitchell or Zion Williamson for Darius Garland, I would do that. I would do it. And you can call me crazy, and I probably would be, but I still think that as good as Donovan Mitchell and Darius Garland are individually, and I think both of those guys are unbelievable, I think you're going to have a hard time – winning an NBA championship with a backcourt that has two guys who are 6'2". I think it's hard. I think you can win with one of them. I don't think you can have two guys who are 6'2", who who are.
You're not going to win an NBA championship with a guy who can't play in the basketball games.
No, you're not. I agree. But it's all about trying to maximize the opportunity that you have. And I, the way I look at it as is, I don't think you're winning an NBA championship with a Garland Mitchell backcourt. I really don't. I think you would need another guy to fill. Maybe you just need a third guard who's a more defensive oriented. Maybe you need Lou Dort. That was another trade.
Oh God, no. You know how bad he was? That they proposed. No. I was reading some advanced metrics for him. No, he isn't help. He's basically Isaac Okoro. He shot 33% from behind the arc this past year, Mike.
All right, I'm just saying that like whatever.
I don't think Isaac Okoro and just trading him like you know the Spider-Man meme where they're all pointing at each other?
Yes, I do.
You actually know that meme? Oh my God.
I know that one. Yeah, I know that.
That's basically Lindor and Isaac Okoro.
Yeah. You're probably right. Look, I just think you're not winning.
I did see an all-time tweet that said the t-shirt company would sell t-shirt companies would sell a lot of Dorcher Chamber shirts, and I that was good. So
you're not winning an NBA title, I don't think, with Mitchell and Garland as your backcourt.
Okay, but I'm not doing the Zion thing, Mike, because he's not guaranteed to play. Listen, he's not playing 250 games in his career, Mike. I'm still putting my chips on him. Well, we're doing this podcast for 10 years, Mike, and I don't know. I kind of want to make a Chipotle bet on this. Can we make a Chipotle bet on this, Mike?
Let's do it. Yeah, we're on.
Chipotle bet.
That's 100%. That's 100%.
The minute that he crosses 250 games,
we're on. I'm shaking on it. We're on.
Chipotle bet. Here it is. So in like 10 years,
look,
I'm going to show up to Head Start basketball camp in the summer, and I'm going to say, "Where's my damn Chipotle?" Just be ready.
We'll head out right after camp, man. We'll take care of you. Look, if he doesn't play 250 games, then obviously, clearly, that would be a horrendous trade for any team to trade for him. And yet, change of scenery, maturity, the potential for him to get things together. When he's been on the floor, he's been historically great.
Okay. Yeah.
So, I would do it.
How many games is he at in his career, by the way? Do we know?
114.
He's not even halfway. We're set. We're good.
Come on. He's like 23 years old, man.
Dude. Do you know whose career he's mimicking right now?
Who?
Sean Kemp, buddy. And in more ways than one.
Sean Kemp played more than 250 games.
I know. But Sean Kemp didn't get this big and didn't start – never mind. I'm just leaving it alone. Let's just leave it at my favorite all-time rec team that I ever played against was a team that was called Sean Kemp's Kids, and we'll just leave it at that.
All right, well, there you go. So, look, if you were a GM of an NBA team, and I was a GM of an NBA team, we would be having different conversations in our war room about Zion Williamson, and that's completely fair based on where he's at and what he's done to this point. And you can look at it. I think your perspective is completely valid. And I think my perspective is completely valid. And one of the things that you have to do in a position of being a decision maker is you have to weigh the risk and reward. And to me, the potential reward with getting Zion in a new environment with a new coaching staff, with different teammates, different environment, that's a chance that I guess I'd be willing to take. But I can totally see a situation where he goes to a new place and nothing's changed, nothing's different. He keeps getting hurt and he doesn't live up to his potential and he doesn't play 250 games. That's completely, completely reasonable. But I think I would take the risk if I was a team. If I could get Zion Williamson in the door, if I was Portland and I could trade the number 3 pick and whatever, something else, and get Zion and pair him with Dame, I would certainly consider doing that if I was Portland. And if I was New Orleans, I think I'd be more than willing to ship this guy out based on what we've seen from him to this point in terms of injuries. If you're in New Orleans, right? Like you're coming at it from the New Orleans perspective. This dude doesn't play. He's hurt. He doesn't take care of his body. I don't think he's ever going to do that. And if that's the case, then that's the guy you want to ship out.
I'm really restraining myself, Mike. He doesn't take care of his body, Mike. Nope.
Remember, it's a family. It's a family show. It's a family show.
I didn't say anything.
I know you didn't. It's good. That's good. I don't know. I think Zion's still on the Pelicans, but I think Dame is not on Portland by the time next season rolls around. And Wemby's on the Spurs. How about that?
Where's Lillard going to be?
That's a great question. Man, I don't know. I keep coming back to Philly. I think he somehow ends up in Philly. There's some version of somehow he gets to Philadelphia. Maybe it has to be a three-team trade. I think Maxey probably has to be in that deal. But then again, if you're Portland, do you want Maxey, another small guard who shoots? I don't know. I think Lillard's not going to be happy with whatever Portland does unless they're bringing him in another second big name potential star. And who knows, maybe Zion's not even that guy. I mean, maybe Dame has the same attitude as you do. Is like Dame's known, right, as a maniacal worker, right? He's a guy who's constantly in shape. He's a guy who has been a great teammate. And maybe, look, you can look at it two ways, right? That Zion's not Dame's kind of guy, or maybe you bring him in and Dame's the kind of guy that turns Zion's career around and straightens him out and gets him on the right path. You could look at it both ways, but I don't know. I don't know where he ends up. Something keeps telling me Philly, just like I feel like Chris Paul and Milwaukee for some reason, but there's a lot of things that would have to happen for him to go to Philly. And I'm not sure that the things that Philly has are enough to get Dame out of Portland.
I don't know. I can't keep track of it.
So I don't know. Is there anything else? I mean, I think those are the main those are the main rumors, the main things that are going on. I'm sure after the draft there's gonna be a ton of stuff that is gonna happen and come out, and we'll see obviously where Brandon Miller and Scoot end up and if there's any deals around those two and three picks.
Yeah.
We'll see on Thursday night. It should be interesting. So
if anything major happens, we'll have to record after our interview.
Yeah, we could maybe do a late night draft recording because we're going to be recording on Thursday anyway. So,
anything crazy happens, late night.
Do a late night after the draft, a quick recap if necessary. All right, let's leave it there. Thanks to everyone for listening. We appreciate you checking us out, and we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Your first impression is everything when applying for a new coaching job. A professional coaching portfolio is the tool that highlights your coaching achievements and philosophies, and most of all, helps separate you and your abilities from the other applicants. The Coaching Portfolio Guide is an instructional membership-based website that helps you develop a personalized portfolio. Each section of the Portfolio Guide provides detailed instructions on how to organize your portfolio in a professional manner. The guide also provides sample documents for each section of your portfolio that you can copy, modify, and add to your personal portfolio. As a Hoopheads Pod listener, you can get your Coaching Portfolio Guide for just $25. Visit coachingportfolioguide.com/hoopheads to learn more.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads Podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.